With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
U.S. ethanol production easing slightly late last week, but demand indicators strengthened, offering support for corn-based biofuels as winter fuel consumption rebounded. New EIA data show ethanol markets entering late January with mixed supply signals, but improving usage. Ethanol production for the week ending January 23rd declining 0.4%, 1.11 million barrels per day. That's roughly 46.8 million gallons per day. Despite the weekly dip, though, output remained nearly 10% higher than the same week last year, more than 10% above the three-year average. Four-week average production rate edged marginally lower to an annualized pace of 17.4 billion gallons. It signals that plants continue to run well above historical norms. Now, ethanol inventories tightened modestly. Stocks fell 1.3% to 25.4 million barrels, slightly below year-ago levels, but still above the three-year average. The inventory builds in the Midwest offset by draws in other regions. Demand showed notable improvement. Gasoline supplied rebounded nearly 12% ahead of a winter storm, while ethanol blending increased more than 3%. Exports declined sharply week to week, but remain historically strong. As USDA's Farmer Bridge Assistance Program rolls out, interplay between per-acre payment rates and federal payment limits is highlighting stark differences in how quickly producers of different crops can reach the cap. Now, with the national average farm size around 466 acres, many operations growing lower-rate crops are unlikely to approach the $155,000 per producer limit, while others could reach it with just far fewer acres. USDA set specific per-acre payment rates for 2025. Under the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program, rice leads $132.89 per acre, cotton $117.35, oats at $81.75, beans set at $30.88 per acre, and barley at $20.51 per acre. Now, based on those rates, rice producers would need roughly 1,167 acres to reach the payment cap. Cotton producers, 1,321 acres. By comparison, soybean growers would need more than 5,000 acres and barley producers well over 7,500 to reach that same limit. But payment limits are intended to spread assistance across producers, preventing outsized allocations to a small number of operations. However, the current structure means crops with higher per acre rates reach the cap more quickly, while producers growing lower-rate commodities may receive only a fraction of the maximum payment, even on operations well above the national average size. So as policymakers evaluate near-term assistance and longer-term safety net changes, the math behind bridge payments is drawing renewed attention. Structure raises questions about whether per-acre payment rates and uniform payment caps effectively align federal support with the scale of losses that producers face across the different crops. Either way, per-acre payment rates combined with a fixed payment cap create very different outcomes. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
Oftentimes, those are some of the coldest, most extreme temperatures that we see in terms of cold stress. So I think it's always kind of a timely topic to revisit that and talk about, you know, cold stress on cattle. What are some of the impacts? What are some mitigation strategies?
Justin Wagner is a Kansas State Extension beef cattle specialist.
Obviously, right now, we've got a big winter storm that's kind of bearing down on a good chunk of the state. Expecting some sub-zero temperatures for some extended time periods here, 2 to 3 days, I believe. Really timely to talk about some of the things. So one of the things I think we have to be aware of is that the environment that cattle are in, there's some behavioral responses that kind of are different between, you know, confined cattle in a feedlot setting versus cattle that are going to be out in more extensive environments like pastures or out on corn stalks. So oftentimes when we get a winter weather event that comes in, that common behavioral response is for those cattle to huddle up. Where we start to see some differences between confined cattle and cattle in extensive environments is really how they react in terms of intake patterns. So a lot of times what we see in a feedlot environment or a confined environment is that cattle will often increase their dry matter intake prior to that storm. We talk about those storm fronts kind of pushing through. So it's not uncommon to see cattle intakes, actually, cattle become a little more aggressive, picking up that intake. That can really set up a scenario that creates some challenges in terms of acidosis or digestive upsets or those kind of things, especially when we couple that with as that storm comes in, those cattle tend to maybe not go to the bunk as much or feed delivery might be slightly delayed. And so we really start to see this disturbance in that digestive system of those cattle. And so there's some strategies that we can use in the feedlot side of things to offset that. One of those would be typically we feed additional roughage. Some operations will cover with hay. Others will feed a storm ration, which oftentimes all that storm ration means is we're simply going to add more roughage to that finishing diet potentially. Recommendations vary. A lot of times it's, you know, maybe 2 to 4% on a dry matter basis that will increase that long stem roughage of the component of the diet, kind of allowing those cattle to increase their voluntary intake, but at the same time, it's roughage-based, so it doesn't necessarily lead to some of those digestive upsets. In most cases, we'll feed those rations for maybe 12 hours prior to that storm, and then depending on duration, usually 12 to 24, maybe 36 hours after that storm has passed, and then try to get those cattle intakes recovered. Now, on the other side of that, we have cattle that would be in those more extensive environments, so cows out on pasture, et cetera. So a lot of times what happens there is as those cattle tend to congregate up, as we get snow cover on those pastures or on those grazing environments, right, makes it more challenging for those cattle to go out and graze, right? So there we get into a situation where we're going to have to replace some of that graze forage intake with some additional supplemental feeding. Now, further compounding that problem is, so as that storm rolls through, as we see those cold temperatures, so the storm we got coming, we're in it. I think our forecasted temperatures are to be, the highs are going to be in the teens for the day. So we're looking at as much as a 20 to maybe 30% increase in energy expenditure and the energy requirements of those cows. So oftentimes we may need to provide some supplemental energy to those cows that are out on pasture to help offset those increase in energy requirements and that reduced availability of graze resources that are out there. So that can be one of the ways we can do that is to utilize a higher quality hay. We can also look at some supplemental feedstuffs. High fiber feedstuffs are certainly preferred. Dried distillers grains, a lot of byproducts would fall into that category as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So kind of rounding out some of the discussion on the red meat side of things is lamb and mutton stocks, which actually fell 14% to about 17 million pounds in December. So a pretty good decline that we saw on the lamb and mutton side, and kind of a trend that we saw a good part of the year.
Tyler Cousins is the director of the Livestock Marketing Information Center.
So moving over to a little bit more discussion on the chicken side of things as far as stocks go. On December 1st, chicken stocks were actually up almost 3%, up about 21 million pounds to over 800 million pounds as of December 1st. A lot of the increase on the chicken side was driven by just higher volumes of stocks for breast meat and thigh meat, which each rose respectively 2% and almost 17% in December there as of December 1st. These increases actually more than offset some declines that were seen for drumsticks, legs, and wings. Those, each of those categories fell 12%, about 16%, and 2% respectively as of December 1st there. Now, turkey stocks, interestingly, fell substantially there, more than 26%. To about 165 million pounds as of December 1st. A lot of those declines were seen across the board in the reported categories. Whole birds were actually down over 30% to 44 million pounds. Breast meat was down 27% to 46 million pounds. And legs fell nearly 34% to 2.8 million pounds. So largely that decline in turkey stocks, not totally unexpected, largely just due to bird flu that took a toll on the flock early in 2025. So we're seeing some of the repercussions of that as we finished out 2025. So watching that pretty closely as we start 2026 here. So rounding out some of the stock discussion here, dairy stocks were actually mixed at the start of December 2025. Butter actually fell 7% to just under 200 million pounds. American cheese increased more than 2% to about 780 million pounds. Swiss cheese actually fell almost 5% to just over 22 million pounds. And then other cheese, so that would be like your mozzarellas, were about even with a year ago at about 560 million pounds. So overall cheese stocks increased just over 1% to nearly 1.4 billion pounds at the start of December. So to kind of summarize this, cold storage stocks on December 1st were largely tighter than a year ago on the red meat side of things. But while chicken stocks actually rose from a year ago, but turkey fell substantially, largely due to that bird flu. But we saw dairy stocks were for the most part mixed. But as we start 2026, red meat stocks will be an item to watch, specifically as we finish the year on some tighter levels there. So we'll see how this factors into the supply picture, specifically kind of looking at the demand profile and just the overall demand as consumers look at those prices in the retail case, sort of make some of their purchasing decisions. There's quite a bit of anticipation for this January 1, 2026 cattle inventory report that we're going to get from NAS here in about a week. You know, a lot of that is just kind of being driven by just kind of some of the expectations as far as what we're going to see from inventory levels, specifically looking at the breeding herd side of things, specifically beef cows and beef cow replacements. What kind of levels are we going to see there? Kind of a few mixed bag opinions there. A lot of it's just drought discussion that's going on in the western part of the U.S. That we're seeing here can change up a lot of the decision making for some of these producers. You know, but also keep in mind some of the things that transpired over this last year from a trade standpoint with Mexico, that border being closed a good portion of 2025, how that sort of factors into the overall supply picture that we're going to get from USDA NAS, right? And a lot of this, that anticipation starts to factor into just overall available supplies in 2026 and to a degree 2027. And so we're just looking at, you know, from a forecasting standpoint, what are those supplies going to look like for us? And that's going to drive a lot of our expectations through the rest of the year.
Tyler Cousins with the Livestock Marketing Information Center. It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to ag chemical application, make sure your equipment delivers. For years, growers and custom commercial applicators alike have depended on Wiley sprayers and Case IH application equipment from Wiley Implement and Spray Center. Wiley offers new and used self-propelled sprayers, as well as our own line of pull-type sprayers for any size operation. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
While some progress has been made in stabilizing the farm economy through the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program and Emergency Commodity Assistance Program, recent numbers show that farmers still need help. Faith Parham, an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation, said farm losses continue to pile up.
Our farmers are really struggling right now. They've seen consecutive years of losses. And so even though we've had some economic assistance from Congress and the White House, we still see losses across the economy.
Parham says the economic pressures facing farmers and ranchers come from rising input costs coupled with commodity prices that just aren't keeping up.
We've had historically low commodity prices, but what's really driving these losses are extremely high production expenses that have increased for the third year in a row. The recent USDA forecast says they're going to increase again in the upcoming crop year. This means that all nine of our principal row crops are going to continue to lose money per acre.
Parham says Congress must act now to ensure farmers and ranchers can make it to the fall when certain legislative fixes kick in.
Yeah, Congress can really step in and help stabilize the farm economy and help us get to some of those safety net investments they made in the summer. Those safety net investments through the One Big Beautiful Bill won't come into effect until October. So we need to make sure we get our farmers to that point. And so they can step in, they can help provide some economic assistance to our row crop farmers, but also our specialty crop farmers who were left out of the recent package.
As farmers and ranchers work to adapt to changing economic conditions across the farm economy, one sector in particular is undergoing significant shifts. Danny Munch, an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation, said that U.S. dairy production is reaching record levels, but warns that trend may not last long.
That output is being propped up by older cows staying in production longer, not by new herd growth. At the same time, the pipeline behind the herd is shrinking. Replacement heifers are at their lowest levels since 1978, and the number expected to calve in the future has fallen sharply. So while milk supplies are high today, the system supporting that future supply of milk is thinner.
He said one of the factors driving trends in the dairy industry is beef economics.
So strong beef prices and beef on dairy premiums, those have encouraged dairy farmers to breed more cows to beef genetics and keep those milk cows in production longer. That boosts short-term revenue for calf sales. We see about $4 to $5 per hundredweight for dairy farmers, but it also means fewer dairy bred heifers entering the replacement pool. So the result is higher milk output now, but greater risk of sharper adjustments later in the milk markets.
Munch says one factor to keep an eye on is the global milk supply as the U.S. has some tough competition.
So just like the United States, we've seen increases in milk production in some of our competitors like the European Union, New Zealand, and Argentina, and that has weighed heavily on milk prices at home as well. The U.S. all milk price fell more than $4 a hundredweight throughout 2025. The flip side is that lower prices have made U.S. dairy pretty competitive overseas.
Chad Smith, Washington.
Thanks, Chad. Well, it brings up the importance of trade and trade deals. Can the U.S., though, find a way to come to an agreement with India? Dan Bossi is president of Ag Resource.
It's going to be tough. The Indians are going to be very protective of their farmer, and they've been showing that in trade negotiations. I think India is 10 or 15 years away from being a big importer of size and substance relative to population and GDP rates. So that protecting of farm income to get elected in Indian elections is key. But as I think longer term, I do think there's going to be India coming to the world market. But as I said, we're probably not looking till 2035 or 2040 before the next opportunity would be there.
It's Dan Bossi with Ag Resource. I'm Tony St. James. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, one of the questions that we get a lot when we talk about bedding cattle, both cows and calves, as well as in a feedlot environment is, well, how much bedding do you want to roll out, right?
Kansas State beef cattle specialist Justin Wagner.
Really a good rule of thumb that I often give producers is you want to roll out enough bedding so that all the animals can actually get on that bedding and have a dry place to lay down. That's kind of our goal. You know, depending on the size of the cattle, that can vary greatly, right? If you've got a set of, you know, freshly received 5 to 6 weight calves that have come in, obviously because of their body size, it's going to take less bedding to bed that particular pen of cattle than it might be some cattle that are going to be larger or some mature cows that would be out on grass. So just always something to keep in mind is a really good mitigation strategy in bedding and giving those cattle a dry place to lay down, especially, you know, some areas of the state have seen some moisture already. So there might be some of those areas where cattle tend to congregate might already be wet or muddy. And so just giving those cattle a dry place to lay down can certainly help them weather some of the impacts of a potential winter storm event. You know, windbreaks are always an important component of that. And so, you know, anytime we talk about cold stress, right, the impact of those cold temperatures can certainly be exacerbated by increase in wind, right? So if we can do something to block the wind, that can greatly reduce the impact of cold stress on cattle. A lot of times I talk about temporary windbreaks, right? And that does tie into bedding, right? Where do you place the bedding in relationship to a potential windbreak? Usually on the downwind side, if we get it right, you know, in terms of which direction the wind's going to blow potentially, you know, giving some consideration to that. In terms of temporary windbreaks, there's a lot of things, you know, that can be used. We have some, you know, steel panel structures that are temporary now that you see a lot of producers use. Those are great. We can also, if we don't have those, you know, we see a lot of times stock trailers tend to be commonly used and just something to allow those cattle to get out of the wind. You can even take if it's an older stock trailer, you can even open the door on the back and create a bar or pipe across it and allow those calves to go inside the stock trailer and the cows will still be outside. So I've seen that done as well. I think that's just an interesting strategy for things on the farm. Another potential temporary windbreak is round bales of hay or big squares of hay and stacking those. You can place an electric fence adjacent to those. We know there's challenges with that. A lot of times people say, well, what happens if the cattle eat it? I'm not too concerned about that. You know, we're in a stressful environment. So that usually the cattle consuming those bales, especially if it's short term, is not as much of a concern in what I've seen in terms of just being able to block that wind. A lot of times I suggest that if we're going to make a temporary windbreak, think about the prevailing wind, right? And maybe making a V so that we've got a little bit of protection with that V kind of pointing into the prevailing wind direction. The challenge with that in Kansas is it going to be north? Is it going to be northwest? Is it going to be northeast? So it's always kind of a challenge to know which direction we're going to get those prevailing winds to come in with a particular storm. But certainly windbreaks can be a great way to do that. Permanent windbreaks, if you've got them, you know, that's great. But more oftentimes than not, we've kind of got to work with some portable structures, especially in cows that are going to be in more extensive environments. Cows on pasture as well, tree lines. You know, most producers tend to know where cattle are going to congregate when the winter storm rolls in. We can utilize those areas to stage additional hay resources. We can also bed those areas potentially as well. I think sometimes that doesn't necessarily get mentioned, but we do have the opportunity if we've got some shelter in the form of trees in a particular pasture. You know, there's really, if cattle are going to congregate there, that can be, you know, placing some additional bedding can be a great way to offset some of the increase in cold stress that those cattle could experience.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
There certainly are some tools.
Mark Brown is Director of Field Services with Plains Cotton Growers.
First of all, I want to remind producers that there still is some assistance coming in the way of payments that will be coming forward to help level off all of the input costs that they experienced last year and get them closer to break even as they go in and visit with bankers. And I know it's time that they're having to deal with the bank and also with the landowners that they deal with and that they lease land from. All of those decisions are important. And a few of the things that they can look at as far as helping toward next year is that I know I was online just this morning and up at District 1 in the Amarillo region, they have printed out their 26 crop budgets. And so people can go in there and look at that. And that's a very good starting point with some good baseline information. You can take that and adapt that to your farm. You can make comparisons of the different commodities. And cotton is listed in there in that. And I suspect that we're just days away from having those 2026 budgets printed on the South Plains website in the Lubbock area. So that'll be something to be watching for. And also our cotton specialist, Ken Leger. Ken does an excellent job with all of the variety testing information, and he has 18 different reports on his race trials that were conducted during the 25 growing season. There is just a wealth of information on there on the varieties and how they performed in different geographic locations under different water scenarios and different growing seasons, different lengths of growing season. And so that would be well worth taking some time. This is a great time right now whenever fields are wet and it's icy in the mornings, a good opportunity to get on there and start studying some of those race trials and that information. Also, we are working on at the Plains Cotton Growers offices the seed cost calculator for the 26 growing season and trying to put the finishing touches on that. I know that producers have many challenges still facing them with high input costs, with still low commodity prices across most all of our crops.
And with 3 million bales already classed this year.
In 2024, we had a total of 2.2 million bales. In 23, it was 1.4 million. And in 2022, it was 1.5 million. So I certainly am glad to see that number a little higher. And we were very pleased with the yields across the area and also with an excellent quality almost across the board. There were some problem fields there at the end, but for the most part, we had a very high quality crop. And the only thing that we can really complain about is the market price that producers are receiving, which is a very low price and very disappointing from that standpoint, especially whenever you have a good crop to sell. There are some things that are being done right now to continue to work toward increasing demand on cotton, but as you and I both know, that's going to take a little bit of time, not anything that can be fixed overnight.
It's Agriculture Today.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.